On today's show, we have a special one-hour report on migrant workers in Canada. Last June 10th and 11th, Kairos Canada organized the first national migrant workers gathering in Toronto. Migrant workers are an ever-growing trend. There is a constant global flow of workers going from one part of the world to another. In most cases, these workers occupy jobs that are badly paid, dangerous, and under constant pressures. In northern countries, there are important needs of workers in many sectors, one of the most important being agriculture. Moroccans risk their lives to find work in the fields of Spain or France, while Central Americans make it through the southern US deserts to reach agricultural areas in California or Florida. While there is a global flow of undocumented workers going across borders, there are numerous programs that make it possible for workers to work in other countries with proper documentation. Considered by some officials to be an example, Canada has had such a migrant worker program since 1966. This is in the field of agriculture. This started with a few hundred Jamaicans. But today, there are almost 20,000 people coming from Mexico, Guatemala, and the Caribbean, and this just in agriculture. Although these workers come to Canada for over 30 years now, little light has been shed on their working conditions. But there is a growing campaign in Canada in support of these workers, and from BC to Quebec, there are groups active in linking up and denouncing these workers' rights. That is why Kairos Canada, an ecumenical network, invited several representatives from migrant workers' support groups to come to Toronto to share visions, actions, and perspectives on these issues. So for the next hour, I invite you to listen to this special documentary report focusing specifically on migrant agricultural workers.
While the barriers to legal permanent migration continue to be largely insurmountable for the majority across the global south, there has been a parallel growth in temporary work programs and so-called illegal movements across borders. Such trends represent an unacceptable dehumanization, commodification, and criminalization of people. For sending countries, migrants are an export product, an ever more lucrative source of wage remittances. For receiving countries, workers are a cheap and easily disposable source of labor, who are discarded or sent home when their services are no longer required. These precarious and largely racialized workers and non-status people are vulnerable to various forms of exploitation and regularly face abuses of their rights and dignity. Canada is effectively complicit in perpetrating and sustaining this present-day equivalent of slavery.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Juana López Sánchez.
Good afternoon, my name is Juana López Sánchez.
Tengo 8 años dentro del programa.
I have been in this program for 8 years.
En el cual la mayor parte de las formas en las cuales he trabajado, la mayor ocasiones, las formas de vivienda son insalubres, son
and
trailers.
In most of the farms that I've worked in all these years, most of these places are unsanitary.
Las cuales en ocasiones algunas trailers son para más de 15 personas, no hay puertas de salidas, no hay sanitarios.
I could tell you that we share a room with 15 people. There are no emergency exits. There is no bathroom service.
Cuartos para aseos personales muchas veces nada más son uno para todas las personas o mujeres.
And for example, there's 15 women in a place and there's only one room for our own personal hygiene.
So my name is Janet McLaughlin, and I'm a student at the University of Toronto, and I'm researching health and safety issues among migrant farm workers. What I found is that a lot of the migrants actually sharing their testimonies over the weekend talked about health issues as a central part of their experience. We heard about a worker who had a farm accident and has spent years since trying to navigate the healthcare and the legal system here in Canada. We heard about another farm worker who had an accident on a bicycle and has faced similar barriers to accessing his health care in a way that he can understand and a way that is helpful to him in healing and getting back home to his family.
Felt in the back of the tire of the platform.
La llanta me absorbió metiéndome en medio de la salpicadera.
The tire took me and I was in the middle of the salpicadera.
Y como no cabía en medio de la salpicadera y la llanta, allí me tenía la llanta girando sobre mi espalda.
And I get trapped on the tire and the tire keep going on my back.
There's a number of health issues specific to farm work that workers face. And then there's also a number of issues around accessing medical care that farm workers face in particular. For example, farm workers are in general working in rural and isolated areas. So for them to be able to access health care, if they have a health problem, first of all, they have to get transportation to reach a medical clinic or a hospital, and that's not always easy. Usually they're afraid to take off time from work. They don't, in the case of the Mexicans, they don't speak the local language, and there's very little public transportation. And so in most cases, they have to rely on their employer or supervisor to get them that health care. But because of the power dynamics in the relationship between employers and workers, they often have a fear in asking for that help. And when they do ask for that help, not all employers are, for many reasons, able to take them to the proper medical care that they need right away, or not willing to do so. And so it really puts workers on farms in particular in a very precarious situation in terms of accessing the care that they need.
Dina Verma. I'm a union side labor lawyer at the law firm of Cavaluzzo Hayes, Shilton, McIntyre and Cornish in Toronto, Ontario.
Okay. A key feature of the program is that the workers, these migrant workers, are returning to Canada on a seasonal basis for over several years. And they may be coming into Canada for 4 to 8 months every year. Some workers have been coming back to Canada for up to 20, 25 years. And despite their significant labor market and social attachment these workers have created in Canada, their years of labor in Canada are not recognized. They do not accrue any kind of citizenship rights by coming to Canada on an annual basis. And so the current program, which doesn't allow them the right to apply for immigration or permanent status, keeps them in a designated class of a migrant worker, or what I would say is a bonded worker.
Por eso pido que si es posible que nos apoyen tanto en cuestiones de salud, porque muchas veces pedimos solicitud para ir a un médico, nos dicen mañana, pasado.
And then I would like to say that we want your support on many different areas, but for example, in terms of health, many times we request that we need to go and see a doctor, and then they say tomorrow, the day after tomorrow.
Muchas veces es más importante para el farmero su trabajo que la salud de su propia gente, sabiendo que en este caso la salud de su gente también depende de su trabajo.
Farm bosses sometimes think that their ongoing work is more important than the health of their workers. But without workers with health, what work can be done?
Por eso pido que si es posible, que si es posible que esto sea atendido. Pues muchas veces enfermos con temperatura, con muchas situaciones de salud, tenemos que salir a trabajar.
And I really would like this to be a very important thing to pay attention to, because many times some of us, even being ill with fever and all of that, anyway, we have to be out there and we have to work.
I spent the winter months in Mexico where I was researching health issues among workers and in general, but also specifically looking at workers who had serious or long-term health problems or even died in the program. And through this tracking of these more serious issues, I also came across some families of workers who were actually killed here in Canada. In various ways, every year there are several deaths of migrant farm workers, and I was able to track their families and interview their widows and children that they left behind. And of course, these were very emotional testimonies that I was able to hear. And What astounded me is how much these women and children wanted to share their stories. And they came looking for me once they heard I was in town because they wanted so much to tell someone from Canada about the loss of their family member and how much it had affected them. And although workers do receive some compensation for a death, it's not nearly enough to replace, even financially, the amount that that worker could have earned throughout his life, let alone, obviously, the emotional and psychological impacts of losing a father at a young age or a husband at a young age. And in these cases, you know, the worker was typically in his 30s or 40s when he died and left behind a young family. One of the main ways that workers die here in Canada is actually in bicycle accidents. And we might not typically think of this as a work-related accident, but if you think about the broader context of how workers are living here in Canada, usually poorly equipped secondhand bicycles on unlit roads is their only form of transportation to access the necessities of life. And this year already we've had several bicycle accidents. One just last week resulted in a death in Leamington. And last year there were three fatal bike accidents, one Mexican and two Jamaicans, along with several other very serious accidents. We heard from a worker here at this conference who had suffered a very severe bicycle accident and is still here in Canada a year and 4 months later receiving treatments. So in the case that I was looking at, one of the deaths was from a bicycle accident from a worker in Leamington. And I met his widow and his children. And the widow, because she could not have enough money in the compensation package to continue paying for her children and her support, she actually was compensated by being given a place in the program. So now she leaves her children in Mexico and comes to work in Canada because that's the only way she can afford to support her family after her husband was killed in this very program. And as I say, she came and sought me out because she wanted so much to tell her story. And she said that when she was here, she was working in Grimsby, Ontario, and she hired a taxi on the day, the anniversary of her husband's death, and spent in excess of $400 Canadian to take this taxi to Leamington to put flowers on the place where her husband was killed. And $400 in her life is quite a significant sum of money, but that was the only way she knew how to get to Leamington, which again speaks to the isolation of these workers and the fact that they can't access the public systems that most Canadians can for various reasons, their linguistic barriers and their the lack of support to help them understand and to navigate these systems. So this death clearly, you know, had a very profound effect on her family, and now she must leave her two children alone in Mexico, very young children, to come here and continue to support them. So it's a bitter irony and a bitter dependence that this family has come to have on Canada, but without that Canadian income, this family could not survive. There just is not the opportunities in Mexico for them to have adequate employment.
You are listening to a special report on migrant workers in Canada. This hour focuses mostly on migrant agricultural workers who come to Canada while taking part in a government-managed program called the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program. The interviews and presentations you heard were all taped during the first National Migrant Workers Gathering held in Toronto June 10th and 11th. The last 15 minutes focused mostly on health and safety issues, and we heard the voices of Tania Chute from Kairos reading from a proposed statement of unity, also Juana Lopez Sanchez, a Mexican worker in Ontario, Janet McLaughlin studying health and safety issues at the University of Toronto, and Jose Guadalupe Olvera Rivera, a migrant worker who suffered a major work-related accident. Finally, we heard of Vina Verma, who is a lawyer defending workers' rights. Now, in the following segment, you will hear more on migrant workers' issues, especially on forced repatriations and legal aspects.
Okay, my name is Adriana Paz, and I work for Justicia for Migrant Workers in BC. and I'm going to tell an story about Marcos Bach, which is a Mexican farm worker that came to Canada under the Seasonal Agriculture Workers Program, and he has been fired with no reasons on April of this year. But first, we have to make a bit of background of the case. And Marcos Bach came with 40 workers in January from Mexico to work at the Golden Eagle Group Farm, which is a farm in the Fraser Valley in BC. And by the way, it's the BC, the largest BC blueberry farm. And when Marcos came with his co-workers...
Which belongs to the Canucks owner.
Exactly. We're not talking about small farm workers. They are big agribusiness farm owner. So when Marcos with his 40 co-workers came here to Canada, they faced with very, very precarious and really poor working conditions. For example, they didn't have drinking water on the fields. They didn't have a place to cover from the rain, to have a shelter where to eat. And they didn't have also bathrooms on the fields. And also, one of the main points were also the bad treatment and abuse from the supervisors. Most of the workers were very, very sick because with very infections problems in the stomach and also with the flu because, in January in BC, it's very, very rainy and they were working outside on the fields without a shelter where to eat. So most of them, they were very sick. They didn't have access to health care. Besides of the abuse and the bad treatment and all the extremely precarious working conditions. So after 2 months living in these conditions, the workers have been trying to reach to the Mexican consulate and to this to their employer to address these working issues. But they didn't have an answer, neither from the Mexican consulate or from the employer. So when Justicia visited the farm, they decided to write a letter, and they asked Justicia to help them in the process to send this letter out to the media and to the politicians and to everybody.
Can I just tell you, was it difficult to visit that farm?
No. At the beginning, no, because was only the group of 40 workers, and we visit the workers on Sunday when they are not working. It's important to clarify that the workers pay a monthly rent, $50, so I mean they are entitled to receive visitors. But when we went to the farm, the workers were very, very frustrated because besides that, they didn't have enough working hours because it wasn't a growing season, so they were working, for example, 2 hours a day, the next day only 5 hours, next day they didn't work, so they were really facing bad working conditions, and besides, they didn't make money to send the money to Mexico, which is much needed funds. So the workers decided to go public with this, denouncing these working conditions, and Justicia has agreed to support the workers in the process to, for example, transcript the letters and to send this letter out. After the letter was released, the conditions at the farm has improved dramatically. I mean, the owner started to put bathrooms, to put drinking water, but what happened is that the repression and the harassment and intimidation started at the farm. So the Mexican consulate visited the farm 5 times, and they were intimidating the workers, asking who was the instigator of this letter behind this letter. So after this, the worker, 3 weeks after, when the worker was working at the fields, Marcos was one of the more vocals at the meetings with the consulate and with the employer. So the employer came and told Marcos that the next day he had to leave to Mexico. And Marcos asked why. And he said, we had some problems in the past, and there is a free seat on the plane, and you have to go tomorrow. And tomorrow we will pick you to the airport, and you will go to Mexico. And he said, why? I am a good employer. Yeah, I am a good worker. Yes, you are a good worker. So why you are sending me back to Mexico? I don't have too many reasons to tell you, but the car is going to be here tomorrow at 6 a.m. So without no reason, I mean, with a real reason, Marcos was fired. After the employer was saying that Marcos has been fired because he was drinking, and Marcos said, yeah, I had a couple of drinks, but I never miss 1 hour of my job. And even the employer told Marcos that, yes, you are a good employer, but I don't want to talk about the reasons. So Marcos really believes that this is in reprisal to being spoken out because of the working conditions. So right now the condition of the status of the Marcos is very vulnerable because he has lost all his rights as a worker, but he decided to stay in Canada to fight the case, to expose and to denounce. And he has legal representation now, but the point is that there is not a fair and neutral dispute resolution process for the workers that decide to speak out because of the poor working or living conditions. Yeah.
But he's still in Canada?
Yes, he is.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So they saw in the papers that he was sent back to Mexico.
Well, he can be facing deportation. I mean, he's now fighting the case legally.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so there is important to have the support of all the immigrants communities that are advocating for the rights of migrant workers. Marcos is going to stay in Canada, but as I said, his status is very vulnerable now, and he has a legal representation, but his case is going to face a lot of uncertainty. So we don't know, but the important thing is it's important to support this case because it's not an isolated case.
Yeah. But where is he left the farm now?
Yes, he left the farm, and he's in Vancouver living with us.
Yeah.
And we'll see how this case is evolving legally, but I think it's Marcos' case is important to bring the attention of this problem of the farm workers, that they don't have a fair dispute resolution and they are facing fear all the time if they speak out, because they can lose their job and the right to stay in Canada as Marcos.
Yo ya estoy hasta la madre de que me pongan sombrero. Escucha entonces cuando digo, no me llames frijolero. Y aunque exista algún respeto, no metamos las narices, porque inflamos la moneda haciendo guerra a otros países. Te pagamos con petróleo o intereses nuestra deuda. Mientras tanto no sabemos quién se queda con la feria. Aunque nos hagan la fama de que somos vendedores de la droga que sembramos, ustedes son consumidores. Don't call me gringo, you fucking beaner. Stay on your side of that goddamn river. Don't call me gringo, you beaner. No me digas beaner, Mr. Puñetero. Te sacaré un susto por racista culero. No me llames frijolero, pinche gringo puñetero.
Chingao.
Now I wish I had a dime for every single time I've gotten stared down for being in the wrong side of town. In a rich man I'd be if I had that kind of chips. Lately I wanna smack the mouths of these racists. Podrás imaginarte desde afuera, ser un mexicano cruzando la frontera, pensando tu familia mientras que pasas, dejando todo lo que tú conoces atrás. Tuvieras tú que esquivar las balas de unos cuantos gringos rancheros. Le seguirás diciendo good for nothing, wetback, si tuvieras tú que empezar de cero. Now why don't you look down on where your feet is planted? The U.S. soil that makes you take shit for granted. If not for Santa Ana, just to let you know that where your feet are planted would be Mexico. Correcto!
Don't call me gringo, you fucking beaner. Stay on your side of that goddamn river. Don't call me gringo, you beaner. No me digas beaner, Mr. Puñetero. Te sacaré un susto por racista y culero. No me llames frijolero, pinche gringo puñetero.
Thank you.
fucking beaner. Stay on your side of the goddamn river. Don't call me gringo, you beaner. No me digas beaner, Mr. Puñetero. Te sacaré un susto por raciste culero. No me llames frijolero, pinche gringo.
Pinche gringo, ¿qué?
Puñetero.
There's a gray area when it comes to people visiting farm workers at the farm.
Right.
Right, because they live on the property
right.
of the farmer.
Right.
Is there anything that we can say to the farm employer that says that it's legal for you to stop us coming to visit you, especially when they're finished work and they're off hours?
It's like a whole area called trespassing law, which I have to be honest, I'm not particularly familiar with, but I believe that you can't, because for example, even under the Agriculture Employee Protection Act, which was the answer to whether agricultural workers could unionize or not, they can form associations. Even in that legislation, if an association wants to try to organize workers on that farm, they have to ask permission of that employer before they can step foot on that farm, because it is their property. And so if you're coming onto that property without permission, then you're trespassing. And since the worker is on that property, you know, if the grower doesn't want somebody to come on that property, if it's on his property legally, they're entitled to say you're not allowed to come on the property. It's another part of the huge problem that I was talking about in terms of the temporary status and the conditions and the enforcement of rights, because you're absolutely correct that by having the requirement that they must live on the property, essentially, and they live out in the country, they're on farms, by being in that isolated status, it's just one more factor that makes it very difficult for them to seek assistance to enforce any rights that they may have.
A big problem is the fact that workers don't have access to lawyers or clinics to assist them in interpreting the contracts that they come to Canada, come to Canada, as well as interpreting and understanding the various employment and labor statutes. I would argue that legal clinics should be in place and specifically designed to assist migrant workers, and they should be funded by the government, because the government says that if we're bringing in foreign migrant workers, it should not have the effect of depressing wages or poor working conditions. But if you bring migrant workers who don't have access to lawyers and can't enforce their rights, then that's exactly what's happening. And so the government, I would argue, must fund those clinics if it is to stay true to their policy statements relating to importation of foreign labor. While on paper, you may say that they can enforce their rights. So, for example, they have the same right as any other Canadian worker to file a complaint or file a lawsuit in the courts. But because of their temporary status, we know that that can't happen. As soon as they are disciplined by their employer, for example, and if the effect of that is to be kicked off the farm, the difference between a temporary worker and a Canadian worker is that a migrant farm worker who's fired not only loses their job, they can't move to another employer like a Canadian worker, and they also lose their home at the same time. So there is this immediate urgency to send them back home, actually, to send them back home so that they actually have no time to file a complaint or to enforce their rights. The other problem is that they can't enforce their rights because if they do, they're scared they're going to be blacklisted, so that they will not come back on the program next year. And we have to acknowledge and recognize that this is an incredibly important source of money for these workers. So when we say they can't enforce their rights, it's a systemic problem. That means that, like, how many court cases can you point to in the last 40 years that this program's been existed that anyone has argued a breach of contract? There is not one. There is not one. And I know that's not because there hasn't been any breaches of contracts. It's simply because the workers can't bring those forward because of their situation. I think the government has to be funding some type of transition space for them, so that if they do get kicked off the farm, the solution or the answer by the government today has been to put them on the next plane back to Mexico or the Caribbean. Actually, the right answer would be to give them a space where they could go to housing of some type, or to pay for some temporary housing while they decide whether they want to file a complaint or not. In some cases, it may be that the worker just wants to go home, and that's fine, but it should be the choice of the worker in pursuing the complaint or not should not be because they don't know if they're going to have a roof over their head.
Dieron por terminado y mi patrón salió muy furioso.
They finished the consult, and my boss left the clinic very mad.
A la salida estaba el señor consulado esperándonos.
Outside of the clinic was the consul from Mexico waiting for us.
Y inmediatamente empezaron a conversar el empleado y el consulado.
And my employer was talking with him.
El consulado me dijo, puedes abandonar el país, allá puedes buscar tu médico, mientras yo arreglo tu situación aquí.
The consul told me that I should leave the country, go back to my country, and I can find a doctor, and he will help me to sort out everything, solve the situation here in Canada.
Mi respuesta fue no, que yo no podía salir del país porque aquí había tenido el accidente, aquí tenía que curarme.
My answer was no, I won't leave the country because I had the accident here in Canada and I should be healing here in Canada.
Los dos estuvieron muy furiosos conmigo por no aceptar lo que ellos me proporcionaban.
Both of them, they got very angry with me because I didn't accept their proposal.
En el trayecto del hospital a su casa, me explicó el empleador, no puedes estar más aquí en mi casa, tu permiso se te vence y por lo tanto puedes salir ya.
In an hour way to the house, my employer told me that I cannot stay with him any longer because my permit is expiring and I should leave.
Eso fue en el mes de julio. Yo, mi contrato se vencía hasta el 15 de diciembre.
That happened in July, and my contract was finishing in December.
The workers enter in on a temporary basis to work in the fields. The program operates during a period that lasts from February to December 15th. There are approximately 18,000 workers who are coming into Canada annually. The majority of them are in Ontario, but there are also workers in Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, PEI, Quebec, Alberta, and most recently British Columbia. The Memorandum of Understanding and the operational guidelines provide that there be a country representative for the workers. So that would be the consulate. And they're referred to as the government agent, who are supposed to be here to assist the Mexican and Caribbean workers while they're in Canada. However, anybody who's doing this work knows the frustrations in trying to get the consulates to actually come forward and assist the workers. And more often, you wonder if they're in fact working for the interest of the agricultural employer.
You are listening to a special report on migrant workers in Canada. This hour focuses mostly on migrant agricultural workers who come to Canada while taking part in a government-managed program called the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program. The interviews and presentations you heard were all taped during the first National Migrant Workers Gathering held in Toronto June 10th and 11th. In the past few minutes, you heard the voices of Adriana Paz from Justicia for Migrant Workers and more from Vina Verma and Mexican worker Jose Guadalupe Olvera. During the two-day gathering, aside from discussing migrant workers' cases and issues, there was also a lot of talk about creating a national network in support of these workers. While members of unions like United Food and Commerce Workers, UFCW, and church-based groups like Kairos were present, there were some questions raised about what kind of network could be put together.
My name is Erika Detkamen-Fuchs. I'm from Justicia for Migrant Workers BC. We formed just last year in response to all the Mexican migrant workers that are coming in through the Season Arrival Cultural Workers Program. And we saw that there was no response by anyone in the community or the consulate or Canadian government to support the workers. So we decided to start doing some grassroots organizing directly with the workers. One of our key goals is not just to fight for improved living and working conditions for the workers, but for the workers to organize themselves, not necessarily in a union, but to organize themselves to take the solutions to their problems in their own hands. So as much as possible, we try to provide support in that, like political education, guidance, education about rights, and then support them on any actions they want to take. So we've been working with a variety of different groups in the Fraser Valley region, and also we're going to be starting to do work in the Okanagan region. We know that last year there were about 600 or 700 workers, and then this year that we expect anywhere between 1,000 to 2,000 workers. So the numbers jumped from previous, the year before last it was 47 to 600 to 700 to 1,000 to 2,000. And we believe in making alliances at the local level with other groups who work with farm workers, especially local Punjabi workers and Quebecois workers that have also coming to work on the orchards and the vineyard, well, especially the orchards in the Okanagan. So we believe in making those kind of linkages, and also not just fighting for labor rights and human rights, but also linking it to the issue of immigration and migration, actually.
Now, Ramon Bultron will speak about his experience in international organizing, and he's from the Asia Pacific Mission for Migrants.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, and good morning. Again, I'm very thankful for the organizer of this event. Migrant workers are forced to leave their country because of the continued poverty and deepening and increasing unemployment rate in their own country. So that means migrants are working, living outside of their own home country for survival. No? And with that condition, it creates them somehow an attitude of individualism because of that condition. But it doesn't mean that they cannot do change. No? If they remain individual and they are not bind together, then they cannot do much. But if they are organized, they are united, they can do change. And this has been proven in a long experience and practice that we have in every country, even here in Canada, and even in internationally.
Es precisamente por eso que necesitamos esa expresión.
Particularly because of the point that I expressed before, you know, I want to emphasize again that we want to have freedom of speech.
Yeah, de esa manera podrían salir algunos líderes mexicanos en todos los farmas de aquí de Canadá y podríamos unirnos mucho mejor.
He says that that way it will allow the leaders from several Mexican workers that are already working in the farms to come out and lead us into or fight against the injustices against us.
Si estos puntos llegaron a ser posibles con su ayuda, claro, de los grupos de ayuda que están. No digo nombres para no excluir alguno, ¿verdad? Pero el sindicato unido con ellos. Si de ser posible esto, todo esto llevaría a una verdadera ayuda para nosotros como migrantes mexicanos y trabajadores, puesto que
this of course cannot be done without the help of your support and all the several organizations that are sitting here today. I will name all of them because I don't want to exclude anybody, but particularly from the union, this will help us to, you know, to or fight against our injustices.
Maybe to restate who has been involved so far, it has been Kairos and the UFCW, the National Alliance of Philippine Women in Canada, the Status Campaign, and Justicia for Migrant Workers. Essentially, what we tried to do with that small working group was to get coverage of the issues affecting living caregivers, seasonal agricultural workers, non-status immigrants, to get representation across the country, to get representation of different sectors, organizing, churches, labor, migrant organizations, and we would certainly want to continue to be as inclusive as possible with the steering committee, and particularly to build the grassroots and community participation. I think that was a strong message from our panel this morning. So we'd very much invite those of you involved in that kind of organizing to join in the work.
And we really need to be clear that what is the nature of grassroots organizing for us? It's exactly what I just said. It's basically the people that are most affected and those who share the common history and experience of those people that need to be the people who are working together. That's the core. The migrant workers and migrant populations need to be the core of this work. And that work and other people, whether they be unions, whether they be churches, whether they be NGOs, the community at large, needs to support those people. Otherwise, I don't think we can talk about true alliances. So our work is grassroots organizations. We've had, and I think many can say this, as grassroots often have been put aside and not respected for the work we do, or our work has been appropriated or misrepresented or completely marginalized. And I think that we, as grassroots, need to value our own work, and I think we do. But we also sometimes need to really be firm that things need to be on our terms, because we do the direct contact work with workers, with migrants, with the most affected communities. We come from those communities. We have those experiences of migration, of class, of race, of gender, and that's where we have to start. So our work in Justicia, BC, has been based on that. We started off as two Latinas who had to sort of propose what were our objectives. And our objectives from the start were very clear when we started to work with the Mexican migrant workers. Because of our own experiences of migration and our own history as Latinas, we connected with the Mexican workers at that level, and we wanted to be very clear in creating sort of like a popular education model, direct contact organizing model, where we talked about the experiences of the workers, talked to them about their rights, and analyzed why we had this situation, why they lived under situations of exploitation, and then together found solutions to transform the situations, with a particular emphasis on developing or accompanying workers and organizers in the process of raising awareness to develop the tools, the skills necessary for us to defend our rights as workers and also as organizers who are from different communities, racialized communities, and determine that workers be the primary agents in determining their own fate. But that's a process, right? And so we have to walk together in that process as organizers and as migrant workers. And that has to be done not just in Canada, but also in Mexico. We're not just talking about migrant workers' rights in Canada. Migrant workers are also citizens in Mexico, and those rights need to be defended also. So we started with the key solidarity and alliance between organizers in Justicia and workers. That's the key. That's primary. And from that, we then decided to we had a policy of alliances with other grassroots organizations and communities of color that were organized to defend their rights and to also develop their consciousness and fight to be the agents of the transformation of their exploitation and oppression in Canada and in home countries. So we developed the alliance and trust between the workers and ourselves, and really tried to develop what is true solidarity, not just a charity model, which we see in many organizations, and work based on our shared history, recognizing ourselves not just as Latinos, but as Latin, as different communities have had to migrate, and also connecting with indigenous communities in Canada and other oppressed peoples. So we worked a lot on the developing the solidarity between the workers. We've had experiences with unions, with churches, actually, and NGOs that appropriate our work as Justicia and other organizations, saying, that they care about people of color, they care about migrant workers, yet migrant workers aren't given the voice, the place, that they need, and also the organizers and communities that work directly with them aren't either. And we had an experience where we had a press conference in BC that we organized together with a union there. And we were not, the union told us very clearly, we weren't allowed to speak at the press conference, even though we were the ones organizing the workers, even though we had built the trust. And it was, in the end, of course, we spoke, because we're not gonna put up with that. But that's just a clear example. And it's nothing new. This is something that happens all the time. So although we do want to form alliances, I think it needs to be on our terms. And I think just a final thing, it's very important for us to build our capacity as organizers and workers, not just to work in Canada, but also to deal with what's happening in Mexico, Caribbean, Guatemala, Salvador, countries that send workers. Because right now, I just came back from Mexico, and there was brutal repression by the government of a community that defends their land. This is a community that actually provides an alternative to migration, San Salvador Atenco in the state of Mexico, that had stopped the construction of an airport project in 2002 because they fight for their land. This community is not armed except with machetes, which is a symbol of struggle. And they were just recently, I was there, were brutally repressed by the state, the local state and federal government, all three political parties. There was 3,500 police officers, military police officers, sent in to beat, rape, and detain men, women, and children. And Canada needs to talk about this. So we need, and in the Philippines, we know there's many political killings. We need to deal with these problems. We need to deal with them as Canadians, as migrant communities, and not just look at the problems here in the program or in the programs that we have. So I think based on that big perspective, that's where the alliances need to be built, is always respecting the needs and wishes and agency of the most affected communities here and in home countries. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Whoops, I should bring you closer to me. Thank you, Erica, so much for sharing your experiences. And also, I think Erica's talk also shows us if we want to work together, we have to just call it what it is, and you know, let's stop hiding behind nice words. Let's just talk about all the challenges. Let's put it all out there. And you know, many communities do feel sidelined by mainstream unions that believe they have the best interest at heart of migrant workers, while migrant workers are not even consulted about certain campaigns. So it's very important to establish a meaningful dialogue where power relations among us all are acknowledged. And that doesn't just mean power relations between migrant workers and employers, but power relations between among organizers as well. You know, when we don't follow the official line, we're basically told, well, we're not going to fund you anymore. And then we end up doing, as organizers, all this work on top of, you know, all of our other daily tasks and responsibilities. And basically, as women, too, as women organizers, we end up being the caregivers and being the organizers and, you know, being basically the people that that do it all, save the world. And then at the end, if we have time, yes, we'll try to save ourselves, too.
Emmanuel, are you ready? Yeah, we're ready. They're ready. We have some a couple of people who would like to come up and sing us a song. Emmanuel Lopez Tambasco ran the Bradford Center for a couple of years and now works with UFCW Local 175, doing workers' compensation appeals and claims. But she also is a great performer.
The songs that we're about to sing for you today deal with justice, social justice from a grassroots level, from a ground level up. And we have in our little repertoire, did you set up the amplifier?
Yeah.
Okay. The first song is called Que Será Será, and it's a Portuguese song, and it's really... the poor people would sing it on the streets in order to, you know, in a time of crisis, in a time of poverty, I guess despite all that, people remain happy, remain free to express themselves and to celebrate their culture amidst tense and pressure and bad times.
que será que andam suspirando pelas alcovas, que andam sussurrando em versos e trovas, que andam combinando no breu das bocas, que andam nas cabeças, andam nas bocas, que andam acendendo velas nos becos, que estão falando alto pelos botecos e gritam nos mercados, que com certeza está na natureza. Que será o que não tem certeza nem nunca terá, o que não tem conserto nem nunca terá, o que não tem tamanho. O que será que vive nas ideias desses amantes, que cantam os poetas mais delirantes, que juram os profetas embriagados, que está na romaria dos mutilados, que está na rindaria dos infelizes, que está na riaria dos infelizes, no cloro dos bandidos, dos esvalidos, em todos os sentidos. Que será o que não tem decência nem nunca terá, o que não tem conserto nem nunca terá, o que não faz sentido. O que será que todos os avisos não vão evitar, porque todos os risos vão desafiar, porque todos os sinos irão repicar, e todos os meninos vão desinvestar, e todos os destinos irão se encontrar, e todos os meninos irão se encontrar, e o mesmo Pai Eterno que nunca foi lá, olhando aquele inferno, vai abençoar. O que não tem governo nem nunca terá, o que não tem vergonha nem nunca terá, o que não tem juízo. La 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 ya la la ya, la ya la ya la e la la ya la la ya, la ya la ya la e la la ya la la ya, la ya la ya la e la la ya la la ya, la ya la ya la e la la ya la la ya, la ya la ya la e la la ya la la ya, la ya la ya la e la la ya la la ya. E o mesmo Pai Eterno que nunca foi lá, olhando aquele inferno, vai abençoar. O que não tem governo nem nunca terá, o que não tem vergonha nem nunca terá, o que não tem juízo.
Gracias. Thank you. Merci.
So for the past 50 minutes, you have been listening to a special documentary report on migrant agricultural workers. All the interviews and conference excerpts that you heard were taped during the first national gathering on migrant workers. Of course, this gathering focused also on other migrant workers like domestic caregivers. But this report did focus mostly on agricultural workers. If you want any more information on migrant workers in Canada, you can contact Kairos Canada or the Migrant Workers Support Centre in Montreal, whose phone number is 450-454-9888. That's 450-454-9888. And I'm going to leave you with a classic song from the Chicano movements of the 80s. This is No Nos Moverán, from a compilation record called Rolas de Aslan, which featured Chicano movement songs from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
En la unidos en la lucha, no nos moverán como un árbol firme junto al río, no nos moverá, no, no, no nos moverá, no, no, no nos moverán como un árbol firme junto al río, no nos moverá, unidos venceremos, no nos moverán, unidos venceremos. No nos moverán como un árbol firme junto al río.